I've always dreamed of being able to order my coffee in Italian like a local, instead of just pointing at the menu and hoping for the best. There's something about speaking another language with real confidence that opens up a whole new world of experiences. That's why I'm so excited about Rosetta Stone Sapphire. It's their biggest launch in over a decade. It takes that research-backed method we all know and trust and adds fresh, cutting-edge features that make it easier than ever to go from knowing a few phrases to speaking naturally about the topics you actually care about. What I love is that you aren't just memorizing vocabulary lists. You learn entirely in your new language through visuals and audio, just like you did as a kid. One of my favorite new features is chat missions. It turns conversation practice into a game, putting you in real-world scenarios, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions, and giving you missions to complete. You get real-time feedback along the way, so you build that confidence before you ever have to use your skills in the real world. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. This gets you access to Rosetta Stone Sapphire in 25 languages. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/rs10.
Folks, welcome to the Draft Deeper podcast. I am this week's host, Maxwell Baumbach. Unfortunately, our boy Nathan Grubel not here with us today. He's got a lot going on, but we're super happy for him. Doing the whole home closing thing. It's a lot of moving pieces. It's a lot of constructing furniture. A lot of stuff that's not very fun. But we're going to have the time of our lives. I'm joined by Stephen Gillespie. Stephen, how are you doing today?
Man, Maxwell, I'm doing great. You know, it's been quite a task lately, like getting all three of us into one spot, but couldn't be more pleased and happy for Nathan, you know, doing some big boy stuff in his life. You know, he and his fiance getting a place of their own. That's huge. So shout out to the Draft Deeper household that's being created there. But I'm doing awesome, man. Just been watching a lot of basketball lately. I don't know if that's been the same for you, but obviously trying to evaluate all these prospects. I'm excited for today's show, man, because it's nice to kind of have a little bit of a change of pace to break up a little of the monotony that we can experience in the draft cycle.
For sure. Yeah. I feel like it's nice every now and then to take like not a step back or anything or per se, because we're always going to be kind of in that grind watching a lot of guys, but just to change up the discussion. Because it's so easy to just focus on like, I'm thinking about this guy. I'm thinking about this guy. I'm watching this guy again. Where this week we are doing a mailbag. So we got to hear questions from you guys, and now that allows us to kind of step back and think about just some different things. Some guys that might not be this year guys, some guys that might be transfer ups, questions about players within a specific conference. And it kind of like got my gears turning in a different way than it has been, which is basically like, just man, where does this guy rank? How is this guy? What does this guy need to work on? So It was nice. I'm excited to get into these. Do you want to lead off with the first question?
Yeah, sure. So first question is asked by Everything Cavs on Twitter. That's @_EverythingCavs on Twitter. And this first question, Maxwell, you just touched on it being conference specific. It says favorite MAC prospect that doesn't play on Eastern Michigan. So that excludes a pretty prominent name, right?
Yeah, we cannot use Tyson Acuff as our answer. No, I think he's talking about Imani Bates, I would guess. Yeah. I think that's who he's talking about. But did you have a guy like right away? Because this is one I thought about pretty hard. And like I've got some honorable mentions, but
this is like I'm not into like my 568th player yet on my on my board. I'm more in like the mid 300s right now, but to me, this is pretty easily Javian McCollum for Siena. Like,
you're thinking of the 2A MAC. Did he ask the 1A MAC or the 2A MAC?
Is it Eastern Michigan?
There are two conferences. So this is a geography thing. So on the East Coast, you have the MAC, which is the MAAC, which is what Javian McCollum calls in.
Okay.
And in the Midwest, we refer to the Mid-American Conference as the MAC, which is the MAC. So there are two MAC conferences. I think just being closer to the East Coast, you probably heard Mac and Associated.
Yes. So
yeah.
Yeah. Then I am unprepared for this question.
That's fine. Hey, no, talk about TV McCollum though, because we were talking about him in the group chat, and like he's a real interesting player people should be aware of. So
yeah, so I think that like you just touched on, we've been talking about him a lot lately. And I know that I've seen his name circulating around. He's about what, like 6'2", 6'3", little undersized as a guard though. He's in that like 170 pounds neighborhood, but despite being a little bit slight of frame, very creative on the offensive end. A slithery, can get to his spots relatively well, considering he's a little bit more of that slight of frame. Works off the pick and roll well. Very good shooter. I love his game a lot. Very fluid offensively. I just have concerns about his defense, obviously, with that slight of frame. Mm-hmm. And we had a healthy discussion on, you know, how much does point of attack defense really matter in the NBA? Some schemes and some players, it's very important. But we have seen, you know, very recent examples of folks like Trae Young, folks like, you know, Isaiah Thomas. You know, there's some smaller guards that aren't the best defensive stalwart, but they bring certain things to the offensive end that kind of make them, you know, obviously a little bit worth it to have them on the court. So with Javian, I think the offense is there. Got to get him up there in the weight room and perhaps, you know, work on that defensive skill. But he's a very intriguing guy. I don't have a top 60 grade on him today, but right now in the process, Maxwell, I'm more trying to cast eyes on as many prospects as I can in the early going and then try to really whittle it down to where I truly think these guys will end up.
Yeah, I think so much about this part of the draft cycle. You may hear my daughter in the background, by the way, for a little bit. It won't be for long. She's going to chill out.
It's a kid-friendly podcast. It's fine.
Yeah. So with McCollum, I like Javion. I still just think he's probably a couple years away. Just continue to leverage because he is like he could score. Like he can 100% put the ball in the basket. I think with him, it's just about like becoming more of a playmaker and like leveraging that playmaking, not forcing it as much with some of his passes. The reads are still really basic. But I think all that stuff is going to come along for him. You just look at the creativity and like guys like that tend to put that together. I am really concerned about the defense. I think he's probably like a guy that like we look at more substantially a year from now or 2 years from now. Mm-hmm. But if you have the time and like you're just looking for fun guys to watch, like could do a whole lot worse than Javion McCollum. Like he's really good. For Mid-America Conference guys, I think the most common name that I'm seeing is Curtis Jones from Buffalo.
Yep, I had him on my short list, yep.
Yeah, so he's like 6'5", wing. He's labeled as a sophomore most places, but he's like a third-year guy. He did a year at community college. He's good. He can score all through levels. He's shooting, 57% on twos. Through two college seasons, 35% on three, so a reliable outside shooter. Can do some nice stuff as a playmaker. Has a 2.5-1 assist to turnover ratio right now. Sees the ball well. Just knows how to play on offense. Like knows where to be when he doesn't have the ball. Good length around the basket. He protects his dribble really well, which is something that a lot of wings don't do. Where like when he's putting it on the ground, he's very careful to like not let guys get into his handle. Shooting touch is nice. His base can be kind of narrow on a shot, but the upper part of his body looks good. Just a guy who knows how to play. On the defensive end, he's a guy who through 10 games doesn't have any blocks, which isn't super common. He's good for steals and getting to passing lanes and uses length well for that. It's point of attack, his effort's not always there, which he is a top option. So I'm always like a little, I give a bit of a pass on that. I'd like to see him do better around screens and things like that, but he's the name I've seen the most. The guy that I'm really into, and if I took this question is like not right now, but just who is the best non-Amani prospect going forward?
Yeah, favorite, not better, right?
Yeah. I would say long term it might be Julian Lewis at Miami of Ohio. Mm-hmm. I like his game a lot. He's 6'6", 200 pounds. So the size is really good. Yep. He works super hard on the glass. He's averaging almost 6 rebounds a game right now. Averaging 3.2 assists as well. Really quick thinker. Just sees the floor really quickly. Love his feel overall. He can really plays on defense really well. Like he's almost averaging 2 steals per game. Really good at staying connected around screens, a lot of little things like that. Shot looks good. He is 48% from the field, 36.8% from three, and 92.3% at the free throw line. He's comfortable off of movement. He stays poised when he faces heavy pressure. His handle isn't like excellent, but he plays with a nice pace to him to kind of get where he wants. He's using that more than like creativity or any crazy moves or anything like that. But I like how he moves off of screens. Like I think he has good upside as like a shooter and reliable decision maker.
So what's holding you back on him a little bit then? Because you're checking a lot of boxes that some of the listeners might be like, well, dang, this sounds like a right now type of guy.
Yeah. If he went like in this year, I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world. I think he just needs to continue to take on a bigger role. Like right now, I think he's probably like third or fourth on the team. Miami of Ohio is like 3-5. Yeah, he's their fourth leading scorer. So like generally when we're talking about guys coming out of a mid-major conference, we're talking like Ryan Rollins played in the same conference last year. Like Ryan Rollins is scoring like 20 a game, like easily. So for me, it's more about role. Like it's just seeing him continue to take on those reps and get more experience in that capacity. Like I like him ultimately becoming like a complimentary player type guy. But I think he could really add to his game. And I mean, NBA teams just aren't looking at like the fourth option on an under 500 team in the MAC. So I think it's role more than anything, but I think in the long term, he can get there.
That's totally fair.
Our next question. I don't think I'm going to get this name right. It's Sarista at C Sarista on Twitter. What do you think of Juan Nunez in the late first, early second round? So we talked about Juan on our international players episode a little while back. We were kind of cool on him compared to the consensus then. I'm just curious if you've kind of changed your tune at all at this stage.
Not really. And it's kind of crazy because this question is asking about late first, early second range. And it, to me, it's not like we just got a question from a fan of his, because if you look at a lot of
people
other places,
like him,
people really like him a lot. And we know that it's not always the case, but sometimes I feel like places just are like, we don't have an international guy. Like, let's just throw one in here to kind of like help us seem a little bit more well-rounded. I still don't have a top 60 grade on him. Like I think he could really catch on as a next year guy, but I don't know. He's just like a very fine point guard, you know, like the size isn't anything to behold, you know, he can be hunted easily. Not what I would consider to be a plus athlete. You know, he's not a negative, fine, I would say, but he's a passable NBA level athlete, makes just safe, smart reads, very heady. He kind of lets the play develop away from him and find the open man, as opposed to just like imposing his will and creating openings for other people. That's really it. Like I worry about his defense a lot. I worry about how the physicality of the NBA could really hurt him on that end. And then the ability to get your own shot. Like,
yes,
I think, I think his ultimate role would be like a TJ McConnell type. And I think I said that on the international episode that we did, but like high-end outcome, TJ McConnell, who went undrafted, probably should have been drafted, right, in his class. But he's nothing that I'm looking at right now. And again, you know, Maxwell said early in the show that I'm trying to cast the net out wide, see who I can pull in, and then I'm going to kind of sort him out a little bit more as the season progresses. Maybe I move him up a little bit, but right now I'm not really anticipating him jumping a lot.
Yeah, I just feel like he's kind of, for me, he's like, oh, what's the rush guy? Like, I feel like a lot of the international guys this year are really young. And I'm like, yeah, I don't mind if like they keep developing. Like, because I feel that way about James Nnaji too. I think who's like barely inside my top 60. And it's like, well, like he doesn't need to come over right now. Like there's I don't know. And maybe a team will draft and stash him and they'll like him from that standpoint. With Nunez though, like I'm not even sure what the value with the stash is. Like I know that's going to sound really harsh, but
sure.
I just think there are a lot of players that are 6'3" that are really good at basketball. that I don't know, like, you really need to commit to this guy, like, late first, early second round, because I don't think he's NBA ready at all.
No.
And then it turns into like, okay, well, what's his upside? Yeah, like he's a really sound passer. His vision on the go is really good. Like he keeps a good map of the floor. He puts good zip on the ball. I think he moves okay enough defensively, but like he is a zero blocks guy, and like not a zero blocks guy this year, like a zero blocks guy the year before playing in U18s and a zero blocks guy the year before that. Which like generally like that is, it's not like a death knell, but it's really uncommon. Like I think it's like Bryn Forbes and a couple other guys. Like it's really
an indicator,
hard.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like that's concerning, and he throws up some wild stuff too. Like there are occasionally times where it's like, what was that shot? Like that, I'm not fully sure that I like trust him as a decision maker and a guy who's going to lead the offense. And his off ball value right now is pretty low. This is a guy who is 12.5% from three on the season this year. The year before that, 26.7%. And then the year before that, 26.3%. Never been a particularly reliable free throw shooter. I don't know that I like trust the touch at any level. Mm-hmm. So if we're talking about a
TJ McConnell, right?
Guy, and like TJ McConnell's a dog. Like TJ McConnell plays like really hard defense. Mm-hmm. And I think like there is some like offensive like carryover where I really see that comp. But yeah, if Nunez is not going to be that level of defender, I don't love him with the ball in his hands, because like some of the shots he takes are wild. And he's not particularly efficient scoring the ball anywhere on the court, and you can't put him off the ball because he can't shoot. Like, I just don't see it with this guy. And that's not to say I'll never see it with this guy, but I'm not in the rush to draft him at 18, 19 years old, like especially like late first round right now. And I know it sounds like we're being really hard on him, but that's just for me the reality of it right now. And it could always change. Like it's a long cycle. We'll see how his game develops. If the shot like really comes on strong, maybe I buy in, but that's just kind of where I'm at with him now.
I totally agree with that. Like depending on who commits and who decides to come back or whatever, you know, maybe take a two-way look on him, maybe an exhibit 10, something like that, you know, for teams that really want to, you know, add some more horses to their stable in the guard room, like definitely bring him in. Like there are things to be excited about him, but in terms of late first, early second, that this class has a lot of guys in that window that I'm much more willing to take a chance on.
Well, and like, and we talked about it on another episode, like Nathaniel Miller was the one who pointed it out that like a lot of teams do stash in the later half of the second round. So like maybe some team will take him there. It's another kind of weak international class after the top couple guys. And I feel like there, even then, like there might be other guys I'd rather bet on. Like I might
in
rather
terms of not playing college ball and stuff.
So our next, or do you want to do the next question?
Yeah, I got it. So I love these questions. You know, shout out to Nick's Twitter. I have a lot of people in my circle that are Knicks fans, and they love their team with such a fierce passion, and I love it, man. So this question is asked by Iman at NYC_Clayman. Says who do we think is a good prospect for the Knicks to take a chance on if they keep Cam and RJ by draft night? Now that is a pretty big qualifying part of the question, right? Because we're starting to see that a second round pick might get you Cam Reddish right now. And I think a lot of teams might part with a
second round pick, right?
What are the Hawks, what do the Knicks know about player development? You know, this is a question that other front offices might can talk themselves into and say like, oh, well, we could make a wing like that work, right? And, you know, RJ obviously being the face of the Knicks essentially right now. So, well,
and like, I just sorry to focus on Cam real quick, but when you look at what average second round value is, like, people can criticize Cam Reddish to death. That's fair. But like, Cam Reddish is not a guy who's going to embarrass himself on an NBA court. Like Cam Reddish can be an NBA player. And like, even if you believe there are definitely people that believe in like the potential that's still in there, but like at worst, he's probably better than whoever you're drafting in the second round most of the time. So well, if,
And, you know, exactly, you know, and again, he's still very young and there's a lot of, you know, room to explore for him. But so I couldn't just answer this question, Maxwell. I had to be a nerd. I ran a quick, you know, draft sim, and turns out it didn't really matter anyway, because right now the Knicks have the 16th pick. So I didn't really
that.
But in that range, I'm not going to like list where I have them on my board, but like somewhere in that 16 window, I have Max Lewis, Jet Howard, Chris Murray, Grady Dick, and Jalen Hood-Schifino, all of which I think would be great candidates to be on the Knicks, right? Like Max Lewis is a potential 3, maybe 4 in the NBA, can really modernize that Knicks offense. Good shooter. I think that he's got like a 72% true shooting percentage, which is crazy considering the volume of shots that he's putting up there. Jet Howard might not be in that range long term. Chris Murray, I think, is a very good candidate for that window because, like, he's a very smart guy. He's used to playing alongside other players, and in short stretches, you could trust him to make good decisions on the floor. Good defender as well. Grady Dick, you know, good connective player. And then Jalen Hood-Schifino is probably more of like the high upside, I would say, along with like Jet and Max, to where he could probably be multi-positional. Looks to set guys up more so than himself, but still has an upside as a scorer and a driver. So I think all 5 of those would be good candidates. What do you think?
Yeah, I like that list. I think the big 2 needs for them, I think, are shooting and like guys who are wing size. Like if you look through that roster, it's a lot of like a lot of guards, and it's a lot of guys that can't shoot. So yeah, Jet and Max Lewis would be like my 2 wishlist guys. And I don't think Jet's going to stay there. I think there's a chance Max might. Like, I think Max might be the guy this year that like everybody knows he's better than that, and like that's still where he goes.
Someone's going to talk themselves into, we need a point guard, we need a center, as opposed to let's take the best player.
Let's take the guy who's 6'7" and shoots the cover off the ball, and like basically like didn't play real competitive basketball for a couple years and is still like just immediately figuring everything out and improved on everything he needed to work on in an off season and is a plus athlete. Teams are gonna overpass all of that, and that's wild. I also wouldn't hate like a big upside swing. Like, do we hate Bava Miller for the Knicks in this?
Because
the shot like hasn't really been there, but it's like I think he might
not really been there either.
I agree. Yeah, he's not playing basketball right now. But like, I'm whatever. Like, if he's available in that range, even if he doesn't play at all this season for Florida State, like that's an intriguing mystery box swing. I don't know how much it helps you right away, and if you're really looking to compete, that might get a little dicey. But like him, like Ryan Rupert was another guy I thought about. I was like, maybe Julian Phillips possibly. Like, and there's another guy who like I don't think he's gonna shoot at the NBA level right away, but like ESPN I think's got him in the 20s, so maybe you just go higher upside and go for that kind of a guy versus
Dylan
like
Mitchell
or Lewis. I'm like the low man on Dylan Mitchell in like the universe, I feel like. But I again, like, it, maybe why not, like maybe you just try to take the best guy. So
yep.
This is a question that I really like. This is from the Two Pointers podcast account at Two Pointers. Who is this year's Vince Williams Jr.? So we both liked Vince last year. Who is the guy that like came to mind for you when you heard that?
Yeah, so like to kind of qualify this question, I loved Vince Williams last year much for the same reasons you did. Someone that I liked late first, early second, could do a lot of complementary things. It's just that like individual shot creation was going to be the one area that I was fairly confident wasn't going to be there. But for a connector, I liked him a lot. So I got 2 names, one of which I think that you're going to really like. My first one is Sidy Sissoko. As a guard who I think could be probably multi-positional, give you minutes at the 1-3. He's a big guy around 6'8". Good passer, good cutter, has already shown that he can play off of a megastar right now in Scoot Henderson. Good defender. His international film was really good too. I think that there's some things there as a shooter and, you know, an ancillary playmaker, like a weak side shot guy. So I like him as a complimentary wing, kind of early second range. And then your boy Tucker DeVries.
That's the answer.
That's my answer.
Yeah. So Tucker was like my like definitive number one answer to this question. So I just think they have a lot in common. Like they're both, the big issue for both of them is like, weren't the best on ball defenders, didn't have the greatest recovery tools. Right. Vince, I think, played bigger than Tucker did. Like I felt like Vince always felt like you'd watch him and be like, he's only 6'6". Like he felt like he was a taller.
Yes.
Guy. Where Tucker very much feels like 6'7". But I think what I liked about both of them defensively is like their instincts were really good. I think Vince's were probably a little better. But
scaled up a lot more.
Yeah. Well, and he was a senior too. Tucker's a sophomore, so maybe it gets there. But just knowing where to be. So even like you're not the smoothest lateral mover, you're not the burstiest leaper, but you know how to get into position, how to alter shots, how to get into passing lanes, how to pounce on a guy that can't really dribble and is trying to put it on the floor. And then the offensive games, I feel, are very similar. Vince Williams could really shoot the ball. Over his last two seasons, he was like around 40% from three. College Basketball Reference cited to not work right now, but he's 41% as a junior, around 39% as a senior. So DeVries is right in that range, and with him he's a little bit slower of an attacker, but they're both very good about like using the defender's leverage to get inside and using their fake and things like that, where I think Tucker probably is a better game is that I think he's more reliable from deeper than Vince Williams was. Like he's only 37% roughly on the year, but takes a lot of them off of movement. He's a better movement shooter than Vince Williams is. And similarly, he's very good inside the arc. He's like a 62% 2-point shooter on the year. Mm-hmm. Both see the floor really well. Like I just feel like in terms of the shooting, their ability to get inside, their ability to see the floor, their instincts, like size, like they just really remind me a lot of each other. I think with DeVries, it's more about the movement shooting though, where with Vince it was more like he's a really good catch and shoot player, and he probably had a better package for attacking off of those plays when he was chased off the line, where DeVries is like better with a ball screen if you're just talking about like what does he do best going downhill with the ball in his hands.
And I feel like Tucker is like relative to each other, I feel like DeVries is getting a lot more attention early on in the season.
Yeah.
And I feel like Vince Williams did coming into his year. So that's true. Me, there's a real big possibility that Tucker might surpass where Vince Williams was drafted last year.
Yeah. Cause last year Vince was like a big guy on Twitter. Like everybody on Twitter, I feel like was pretty in on Vince, but like, it felt like a while before like the major sites started to mock him. We're like, this year you have Sam Vecenie being like a guy at a big publication being like, hey, this guy's really good. And I feel like it was a while. Yeah.
Draft show.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We're like,
they just shouted him out.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. Cause I feel like with Vince last year, it was probably until like January before he started to get those kind of nods. And then even then, like ESPN had him in the '90s, like pretty late in the draft cycle. Mm-hmm. So I think everybody, like the consensus took a while longer to come around on Vince than Tucker, but yeah, I think to your point, it does seem like people are a little quicker on the draw this year with that type of player.
No, 100%. And that brings us to our next question. I think that these two kind of segued really nicely into one another. So friend of No Ceilings, friend of a lot of people on a hashtag draft Twitter, Simon Rath at Hawks Draft Nerd on Twitter, asked a very poignant question. He said, would you rather nail an eval on a top level recruit who ends up being a star player, or an eval of an under the radar guy who almost no one talks about who ends up being a good NBA player? And I think that the second part of the question is becoming more and more difficult now.
Being
the one guy that is in on a player is so much more difficult now, because the thing about the draft community is that we are sharpening each other so much that we really have to bring it every single day to be relevant. And I would say that we need to kind of temper how we qualify that question to where, like, you and I might know a guy, but you know, if these major, you know, draft syndication sites or whatever aren't really, are talking about a Tucker DeVries as a sleeper when they're introducing him, we're like, what are you talking about? We've been talking about Tucker DeVries for months now. You know, we really need to kind of temper how we ask the question that almost no one is talking about, because
draft
Twitter communicates all the time.
Yes. Yeah. And I think we need to view it through the lens of like a normal person. Cause like,
yes, we're not
like we have changed the definition. And I say like we, I mean like the draft Twitter community has changed the definition of sleeper to like a preposterous degree. Like a sleeper used to be like, who's the guy who might go like 34th and have a great NBA career. We're like, this guy's a sleeper. And like by sleeper, we mean like, this guy might make the back half of the top 100 3 years from now. Like, like we have taken sleeper too far. Like, that's why I try to use like deep cut, is because it's like, this guy's like a real deep cut. Like, this guy like might be somebody a couple years from now. Where I feel like with sleeper, it's like, this is a guy who's like kind of in the conversation already. So, I do think you're right, though. And I think it's a good thing. Like, I love that like everybody is like just being a sicko and going... going into the draft, we're like trying to just find guys, like trying really hard to come across players. And like, it's so fun to just like find a random guy and be like, oh, I kind of like him. Like, it's a fun experience.
And I talk about
question though.
Like, oh yeah, please go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, like, I think it's tricky because I think the first one is probably more important, right? Like if you're a team and you're picking at the top, like, that is the most important job you could possibly have, is like nailing that top evaluation. I think it just depends on your perspective and like how you're thinking about it. Like, I love nailing those back end guys. Like, to me, like, that is like the part that I enjoy most. And like, even last year, like just like being higher on a guy like Jalen Williams throughout the process, where like, I didn't even have him like first round until like closer to the end of the draft cycle, but still back then, like, people were still like projecting him in the 60s and 50s, and like by having him in like the 20s, I was high on him. Like, that felt really good. Like, that felt really affirming to just be like higher throughout, and then like up until the end, like, there, that's good. Like, that to me is like super rewarding. So I love doing that, and I think that when you're further down the board, that's obviously where teams can recoup a lot of value. So I mean, you just like look at the team, like the Heat, like year over year, like getting guys like Max Strus, who
Gabe Vincent.
Yeah, exactly. Like those type of guys, like that is real value. So I think you can take a lot of pride in either. I personally, like, for the spot I'm in right now, I kind of like nailing those guys that like are back end people. But I think realistically, the first one is like the most important thing. If you're like working for a team, like, I think that would be like the most important thing. But for like what we're doing right now, I think the second part one is probably more fun.
Yeah. I think that you could, if you're the Memphis Grizzlies, right. And you say you didn't, for whatever reason, didn't get Zion, obviously you didn't, or you didn't get Ja, but you're like, but we drafted Jake LaRavia.
you know what
I mean? Like, how much job security do you have in that aspect? I think that the way that you separated that was awesome. But I'm a lot like you, man. Like, I think obviously you have the whole No Stone Unturned series that you ran in the offseason, which was beautiful. I'm a lot like that too, man, where even a guy like Santi Aldama, who during my first draft cycle, where I was really diving in, I would ask like really smart, respected people about Santi, and I could tell you a number of them were like, yeah, I don't know, I haven't really watched them, you know, and hearing him get drafted on draft night, like, I stood up and raised my arms like it was my own son, you know, that got drafted. So I have a lot of satisfaction in that, but the way that you laid that out, like, the importance of, you know, I was high on Benedict Mathurin compared to some of the other guards that other people were higher on, and now he's looking like a rookie of the year, you know? So obviously that looks like, or that's more important to the front office. But yeah, finding sleepers is always fun.
So on this next one, this is actually a question from my dad, a former coach himself, who asks, as you look at prospects, how much interest do you have in who their coach is? Or at this level, is that not really taken into account? I think it's really important. And I know in the No Ceilings group chat, we have coaches that we really don't like. Like, we have coaches where it's like, oh no, like, this guy's playing.
Coaches, if you're listening, like, cover your ears.
Yeah. No, we love all you guys. We love all you guys. Yeah. It's just for the prospect. There are coaches that put guys in tougher situations than others. And a lot of times it's understandable. Because, like, a coach's job isn't to make me happy. A coach's job is to win basketball games, stay employed, and keep that sweet, sweet booster money rolling into his school. So I get it a lot of the time. But, yeah, I do think it matters quite a bit. I think I think there can be positives and negatives. Like, I think a guy like John Calipari, for instance, will give, you don't have to like worry about like him giving time to a freshman. Yeah. Like, he's going to play him, but not always in the role that you want. And like the example that I know Corey Tolliva is thinking about right now is Ashton Hagans, who like Ashton Hagans, like the best thing for him was to play point guard because he probably was not going to play on the court if he wasn't playing point guard. But then like Emmanuel Quickley and Tyrese Maxey like didn't really get to show what they could do because it was like, all right, well, the best thing for Ashton is to have him with the ball in his hands. So I know you guys are good at that stuff too, but because you can do other things, like you're not going to get to do as much of that. So it does matter because, yeah, a lot of times guys will be pushed into different roles specific to the type of coach. But I want to hear what you have to say on this one. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, so I would say more than I used to. That's literally what I have written down in my notes. I think I tend to look at it more if I see it, that a player is underperforming compared to my expectations. Like if a player is putting up numbers like Brandon Miller,
you know,
this early in the season, giving you like 19 and 10, Coach Oates, fine coach, but I like what I'm seeing from Brandon Miller as an individual prospect. I'm not really giving it much thought. Whereas like if I look at an Amani Bates from last year, you know, underperformed compared to expectations. And that's when I start looking into the Memphis program, like who's getting, you know, like, does he have a point guard? You know, how open is the floor? What does the scheme look like? Yeah.
They played him at point guard when it's that was not in his wheelhouse at all.
Yes.
Like right now he's a low assist guy. Like imagine last year, like a whole year ago of Monty Bates being like, you're running the offense, buddy. Like, like there's
similar thing to Jalen Duren when I'm watching him play at the level that he was without a true point guard or a guy who has the knack for setting him up for open shots. Mm-hmm. So then like I said, relative to expectations, that's where I really start to pay attention to it a little bit more. Like say an Amari Bailey this year,
I look at the
situation and I'm like, okay, I really had high hopes for him last year. I think that he's a very talented guy. Tiger Campbell's on this team. It's a senior upperclassman laden team. Does Coach Cronin have the patience to put up with mistakes and let him grow and improve? So if I do see him make a mistake and he's not getting the minutes, I can now kind of add that into the equation.
Yeah. And I think like Mick Cronin is another great example where like, he has a reputation of like, he's going to coach his guys hard. He cares a lot about effort. He cares a lot about defense. He cares a lot about making mistakes on offense. Where like last year, Peyton Watson just never got the chance. Like Peyton Watson played like 6 minutes a game. And I think NBA front offices bet on just like Mick Cronin wasn't patient enough. So the Nuggets took him in the first round anyway, even though he like didn't play in a lot of games or played very few minutes.
And Zaire Williams for like, Stanford, you got to start considering high school film, I think, more now, more so than ever, because these players aren't necessarily making the best choices for their style of play. Like sometimes I think that they get caught up in the prestige of certain universities as opposed to like playing for coaches that will get the most out of their talent.
For sure. I think that's a very real thing. I think you look and like to continue on like the UCLA example, like and to touch on Amari again, like I think in some ways it can be a positive thing where it's like now that Amari like struggled out of the gate and now he has his offense going and his shot falling. It's like, I actually kind of like UCLA for
him. Yeah.
Because like now he's like really competing on the glass in the last couple of games. I feel much better about him defensively than I felt coming into the season. And it's like, well, playing for a guy like Mick Cronin probably ended up being a good thing for him as long as he can continue to hit shots and stay on the court. I think about AJ Griffin with Duke last season.
Okay. Where, yeah.
That's like, a good one. So I was, AJ Griffin's a weird one because I was out on AJ Griffin and that like I didn't have him top five. And like a lot of people on draft Twitter did. Mm-hmm. And my main concern with AJ Griffin was that I did not like the defensive film at all. And I still ranked him on draft night higher than he got picked because I was like, well, he's just such a good shooter. Like the touch is ridiculous. Like
coming off of injury too.
If you're that good at just putting the ball in the basket and you're 6'6", like you're going to play in the NBA, even if I think he'll be like one of the worst defenders in the league. So like, regardless of how low I am on your defense, like you're going to play. He fell on draft night. The Hawks took him and like Coach K, it's just become like pretty evident. Like guys didn't play defense under him. He didn't have a philosophy. He never worked with guys on it. Like, guys just kind of stunk playing defense at Duke the last couple of years. And now you look at him in the NBA, he's fine. He's like a perfectly competent defender, especially by rookie standards. And in the college, I'm like, he was getting back at all the time and like nothing ever changed. And that's probably just the coach he was playing for. We're like, now in the NBA, maybe he's got somebody holding him accountable, whether it's his assistants or teammates or whatever. And like, now the defense isn't an issue anymore. So I, in hindsight, it's like, I probably should have taken into account, and guys in the No Ceilings group themselves were saying like, hey, Coach K doesn't play defense. Like, we talked about it with Paulo a lot too. Like, you know, Mark Williams like was just so wired to do that that he just kind of did it on his own. But for a lot of these guys, like those mistakes,
Wendell Moore
didn't really get like touched or taught upon there. So yeah, I think there's all sorts of different ways that coaching can affect how we view guys, and it is important to take into account.
Absolutely. All right. So this next question is asked by Joey Barrett at Joey Barrett on Twitter. It says, what player would increase their stock if they grew 2 more inches? I would say all of them at first, very lazily. But seriously, I have 2 names for you, and I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah.
The first one, I'll say Cason Wallace. With that, was that,
that was
your
my
name?
Answer.
Okay,
that
I got a backup. Answer. I got a backup. Okay. I prepared because I felt like that's the obvious one.
Mm-hmm.
I would say Cam Whitmore would be the second one.
Ooh, okay.
Why don't you talk about Cason a little bit more as to why you think that he would be more benefit?
Yeah, so I think Cason right now is a combo guard. It's like, I'm still really excited about him. Like, I think he's going to be a real deal, high-level NBA combo guard. Plays awesome defense. Will guard either guard spot incredibly well. Shiftier than I expected. First step better than I expected. Shooting the ball better than I expected. Really setting the table, like has like combo guard size and the strength to guard ones and twos and the length to do it. But like really it, just in terms of table setting and how he gets guys open, like he's a guard. But if he was 6'6", like, and you knew, cause like, I think he probably is going to be able to like cover some threes the way Davion Mitchell is able to cover some twos, despite being like 6 feet tall, just because he is so strong and has so much length. Like, if Cason Wallace was 2 inches taller, you could talk me into being like, he's going to cover fours. You know what I mean? Like, he's just like that type of defender. And I think if you were talking about him as then an offensive player too, who's 6'6", you can reliably trot him out as a point guard. Like, the amount of mismatches he could create on that end, the amount of versatility he would have on defense, like he would probably be number three on my board if he was 6'6". Like, so he was the guy that like I thought of first.
Yeah, I think that that's the most evident one, because I think that he's kind of overqualified defensively for the position that he plays. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, being positionally versatile to defend 1 through 3, kind of similar to like a Drew Holiday or Marcus Smart, which is the type of player I think that he's going to get a lot of comparison to. Mm-hmm. But I bring up Cam Whitmore because he's 6'6". And about 230, 240 pounds, very powerful athlete. I think if you're looking at him in that 6'8 range, now we're looking at him in the mold of like the premier level athletes, wings, kind of positional guys. And he's very adept at, you know, getting to the basket. He has a strong enough handle. I think that it could stand to be tightened up a little bit more. But looking at the things that he can get away with on offense, and the stuff that he's best at, like how powerful he is, how great at cutting he is. You know, he's growing more as a 3-point shooter. Defensively, he's already showing you at Villanova that he's capable of defending multiple positions. And I'm actually been more impressed with his defensive rotations coming back and like just now starting to play college basketball. I'm more impressed defensively with where he's at than he is offensively. I think that being 6'8", 230, 240 kind of lends him to be more in that like NBA superstar kind of archetype, as opposed to being on that 6'6 size where you start questioning, you like, well, what position does he defend? You know, like what's his role on the offensive end? Being a little bit better, I think, clears a lot of that up. And I have him number 3 on my board right now. If he was 6'8", like I wouldn't move him up anymore, but maybe more people would start considering him at that 3 range.
2 other guys I'll throw out real quick. One is just like a me personally guy, and that's Dylan Mitchell. Where like if he was 6'9", I feel way better about the fact that he has like 2 assists on the year and hasn't made a 3. And then another one was the guy that we were talking about the other day, because I have been kind of like grappling through to put him, and that's Taylor Hendricks at Central Florida. Because he's listed at 6'9".
It's nine, yeah.
But if he's 6'11", and you think about how he rebounds down, he protects the rim, and it's just like, oh, he's a center, like a 3D5. Like, it's way easier to project him. Yeah, versus like now, it's like, okay, well, like, yeah, he's going to make shots out of the corner. Yeah, he's going to like play really good defense. Yes, he's a plus athlete. But like the ball skills like probably need to come along a little bit. Like, I feel like he would be an unquestionable one and done, like near lottery talent. Like, I think he would be really in that mix if he was 6'11".
Like that Ushman Zhang role. How about, can we just be funny and say, let's just make Victor even taller. Let's just
If he was 7'6", it would, the hype would be out of control. We've got a fun one here. This is from Filipowski season at Cannibal Serb. When doing a big board, more than a mock, how much do you weigh the risk versus safe pick in terms of where you place guys?
Okay. I don't think that I do it too often when I'm making a board.
Okay.
And I want to go back to just the question. I think it's very smart that Filipowski season said more than a mock, because I think in a mock, that's where you're considering safe versus risk, because you start having to consider like who's on the roster already, like what's the history of the team, things of that nature. Whereas when I'm making a board, I'm just looking at talent relative to one another. And like, I might have a guy like Malik Renew higher than someone who's a fourth year senior putting up, you know, great numbers at a very major university, because I like him more long term, because I'm seeing flashes in a very smaller scaled role, and I'm projecting that out a little bit more. And I just think that he could do more than what some of these other more, I think some guys are going to get drafted because of productivity on a long, for like a long career in college. You know, like some guys are just going to get looks, like Luka Garza, players of that ilk, right? Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily weigh risk versus safe when I'm making just a board of players and I'm saying like who I think is 15th as opposed to 27th, or you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think the way that that he framed that question is perfect, because a mock is like at a certain level you get to the risk versus safe pick discussion.
Yeah. It's like something I still think about all the time. Like, this is like a really fun philosophy question. Because it is like a real phenomenon. So like guys that like, do you guys, I have it in a similar range are, and I don't think they're going to be in a similar range for long. I'm just kind of like waiting to see one guy continue to produce how he is. Like,
your board has to be done right now. You got to be done. Choose now.
Like CD Sissoko and Trayce Jackson-Davis, where like, I think most people have CD in the, like the 20s, and like, I have him in like the 40 range right now. Because like the free throw shooting is really bad. Like the free throw shooting is really concerning. And like, he is hitting his threes right now, but I don't know how much I buy that. But I love his versatility on defense. Mm-hmm. I love some of his playmaking. But then like at the same time, it's like, well, Javi King is getting a lot more of those like secondary on ball reps for the Ignite so far this season. So like, how much do they trust CD? Like, there's like real questions like what he can be. We're like with TJD, like, I think Trayce Jackson-Davis is going to be a reliable backup big who like plays in the NBA like for a while. Like, I think he's going to be around and be good. Yeah. And we talk about it as a group quite a bit too, that like he plays in a very archaic offense where it's a lot of just like, oh, throw the ball into the post, TJD, go get to your hook shot. Whereas like in the NBA, he's going to get to do more dribble handoff. He's going to get to do more pick and roll. He's going to get to do more short roll passing. But right now, a lot of his passing is just out of one specific area.
Maybe even shoot a three.
And like he's gonna have that post-up bag. The post-up bag is not gonna go away. And when he gets smalls on him in the NBA, he's gonna be able to use it to punish them. But there's like a lot of stuff that like as just a roller that we don't get to see him do. Like, we just don't get to see a lot of like he sets a ball screen and rolls to the basket. I feel like Trayce Jackson-Davis is gonna be in the NBA for a long time. So how do I weigh that versus a guy like CD Sissoko, who is a wing that might not be able to shoot at all? And if that's the case, then what is his role when like the best thing he does on offense is dribble and create? He's still not that great at it. And generally guys that like if he's not getting those kind of reps on an Ignite team, like in a high level, why would he get them in the NBA? So like there's a real ugly floor on Sidy Sissoko, where I feel like with Trayce Jackson-Davis, the floor is like, maybe he just ends up on a team where like he doesn't play that much, or like he doesn't fit the scheme. But like, I don't see a world where like Trayce Jackson-Davis is a completely unplayable NBA player.
But you're like, still also applying ceiling to that too.
Exactly.
Where you're discussing
like,
where
CD, yeah, if CD does shoot and CD's a reliable player, then like he is what every team wants. He is a 6'7" guy who can defend multiple positions, create off the bounce, and knock down threes. And like all CD has to be to even like be that is just like a reliable 3-point shooter out of the corner and a guy who makes like 60% of his free throws. Like that's all we're asking out of him to like really probably be a top 20 pick. So yeah, like that's where it gets tricky, is it's like, okay, like right now I have these guys in a close range, but like I think their potential outcomes are completely different. Like I feel like Trayce Jackson-Davis's ceiling probably isn't that high. But I also just don't see a world where like he's not around the NBA for a long time.
Yeah, and I have TJD at 30 and I have Sidy Sissoko at 38. So I too similarly have them within, you know, that same range. So all right. I'm gonna ask you a taboo question here, because I know that we're both gonna be transparent with this, which is why I love what we do.
Yeah.
Chip Douglas at 207 Celtics. Shout out to the Celtics. They are absolutely killing it in the NBA right now. He asks, what are your thoughts on the influence that looking at other people's boards and mock drafts have on your personal board? No one ever lets outside noise affect their own stuff, right?
Yeah. I feel like there are going to be people that like lie and are like, I never look at any of it. Like I you do. People look at it. I don't let it like overly sway my opinion. And I would say most of the time I try to do it for people that I know I can talk to. Like I'll look at the ESPN board, but like I don't put a ton of stock into it. But like a guy like Adam Spinella, like I can DM Adam Spinella, and like if there's a guy that like he's really high on and I'm not, like Adam's a smart guy, I trust Adam, and I can just shoot him a message and be like, hey man, like what are you seeing in him that like I'm not seeing? Or like same with like all the no ceilings guys. Like I love like just texting people and being like, hey man, like I don't see with this person. What do you think? So I like that, but to me, it's more of just like a question asking exercise. It's more about being like, what is this person seeing that I'm not? What are they weighing that I'm not? So I look at it, but I don't think it like it affects me. Like I've never seen somebody be like, oh, this guy's five, I got to move him up my board. Like I look at stuff, but it's never made me like insecure. Like I've never looked at something and been like, oh well, I better change, I gotta fit in and like have this guy in this range. I will say I do for my final board somewhat take it into account, just from like a value standpoint. So like if I know a guy is like 100% not getting drafted, but I like him, I'd be more predisposed to put him like 65 versus like 40th. Because if I know, like, in this hypothetical exercise, like, he's not going to get drafted, well, then, like, why would I use a pick on him? Why wouldn't I just try to get him as an undrafted free agent? So I think, like, from that standpoint, it is important to, like, know the relative value that these guys are expected to have coming in. So, like, so from that perspective, a little bit. But that's the only time I ever really take it into account. It's just, like, I'm not going to rank a guy, even if I think he might be, like, the 20th best player, why wouldn't I just rank him, like, 30th if I know I could get him with the 30th pick versus, you know, putting him 20 ahead of I don't know if that makes any sense, but
no, I get what you're saying. I think a lot of people say that I like this player, but I think his value is better if you pick him lower. I don't subscribe to that notion, but I respect it because you're playing a lot more reality into how you're laying your board across. Where for me, like to answer the question, I do it. I look at boards all the time. Like especially like you said, for people who I respect, who I know I can hit up, like Basketball News, like if they're putting something up, like I could hit up Mr. Babcock and say, you know, hey sir, can you come on the show and we can talk about this player because I'm struggling a little bit with him as a prospect, right? I know it's taboo for some people to say that and they'll deny that they do it at all, but when I do it, I don't look at it as like, hey, this player, Smiles Johnson, that Albert just
got,
like,
good old Smiles Johnson.
Like, if Smiles Johnson is on Albert's board, I'm not going to look at that and say, oh my goodness, I have to move him up. To me, I look at a board and I see Smiles Johnson on there, and he's a fake player. Just for people who might be confused, but
yeah, if do
I
not try to type Smiles Johnson into like College Basketball Reference, be like, I might have no idea who this guy is.
Sounds like a jazz musician, but
yeah.
But if I'm looking and I see a Smiles Johnson on somebody's board, I'm not looking at it and say, oh my goodness, like I got to move him up. To me, I'm looking and say, like, Smiles Johnson, I've never heard of him before. Let me go and look at him. Like, to me, that's what I'm looking at. And this is like the whole concept of what I'm calling prospect sharing, you know, and that's what makes you know, our draft community so great, is that we're always exchanging players, and it helps us to look at them, evaluate them, break them down. And then we have that dialogue later and be like, this is my area of concern. And then that's where philosophy comes into play too. It's like, what do you find more valuable in a forward as opposed to a guard or a big man, right? Like, there's so much nuance into it. And again, you know, Chip, I look at boards, other people's boards. It's crazy, but I don't let it influence me. If anything, I use those boards to find other prospects that I might not be too familiar with and try to help grow as a scout.
Yeah, I think it's necessary to like keep a finger on the pulse. Like, I think I think you should look at other people's boards. Like, I feel like that's a hot take, and like, I'm not saying like you should look at it and like let it influence you, but I think it's important to know like who what's the consensus right now. Like, what are people seeing? Who are they seeing? And I think it's I think it's good to just like question your own line of thinking. Like, I think this idea of like, you should only use like your own brain to like determine who's good. It's like, I don't know, like everyone on Twitter likes to say like, no one ever like really discovers anybody. And like, that's true. But at the same time, it is good to like find players and just be like, all right, well, this person's talking about them. Why? Like, it's a very useful tool to like ask yourself questions and like make yourself think about where you're ranking these players.
Welcome to No Ceilings, where we look at other people's big boards and we believe in player comps.
Yeah. I still hate player comps. I do not like comps. But I think it's a good exercise to make yourself think about prospects, where they should go, what their value is.
Yep. All right. So last question. Matt, is this your question?
Oh yeah. This is from Nathaniel Miller at Journalist Nate, friend of No Ceilings.
Shout out to Nate.
Who are your Baylor Shireman guys, low/mid-major wings, wing prospects you want to succeed this season and then transfer to a high major before going professional? So this is like a really fun, like, this is our type of question. Like, these are the guys that like we are always texting about, being like, hey, have you seen this guy? So this is a fun one.
Smiles Johnson has to.
Smiles Johnson's got it. Smiles Johnson's going to get an NIL bag and transfer
from whoever the F State University.
All right. Were there like immediate guys for you that jumped out, or?
There's a bunch, man. Okay. I got one that I haven't, and this is me kind of tooting my own horn. Sam Hastreeder of North Dakota State. I like this guy, man. He's playing about 19 minutes a game. He's 6'7", 210, kind of a wing forward. Within 19 minutes, he's giving you 5.5 points a game, almost 4 boards, and giving you 51.9% three-point shooting on about 2.5 attempts per game in 19 minutes. Like, scale that up a little bit. Like, he's not a good defender right now. He's also like a real freshman, not like one of these like red shirts or let me claim a COVID year. Like, he is a real freshman. Not a guy, I think he was maybe a 2-star recruit. Just one of these guys that I didn't discover him. Obviously he's in college. Like, other people knew who he was before me, but I stumbled upon his name while running a Barked Orbit query based on shooting and size, and went and watched him. And this guy might be the best shooter in the country.
Really?
Maxwell, for people who aren't familiar, I believe he's already at one point this year had a 7-for-7 3-point shooting performance. Like, and that was like early in the year. Now, this is, I don't feel like I need to qualify this, because if I'll just read Nate's question again, it says, low mid-major wing prospects you want to succeed this season and then transfer to a high major before going to professional. So I don't have to throw out the typical caveats of like, level of competition, like all this other stuff. Like, he's showing enough right now as like a true blue freshman at a, you know, North Dakota State. It sounds familiar, right? That's because it's where, you know, isn't that where Baylor Shireman played?
Who's at South Dakota State? So it's a rival school.
So yeah, so Zeke Mayo would be like the more apt, I guess.
They have the kid who's on Nebraska now. Like, I feel like they had, feel like they had somebody last season that like did a transfer up, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Sam Cristel, who's on Nebraska now, is on
Yep. So I will say, Sam Hastrader of North Dakota State, 6'7", 210, freshman, forward wing, who is shooting the cover off the ball. He might be the best 3-point shooter in the country. It'd be fun to see him, you know, maybe get a call from a bigger university for a bigger role.
A name who jumped out for me, a guy I mentioned in my column last week, Jace Carter at University of Illinois Chicago. 6'5", like big body, like 6'5" and like comfortably a 3 rather than a 2. He is very powerful. He screens really well. He rebounds really well, almost averaging 6 rebounds a game. His ball skills are lacking. Like, that's like the one thing really working against him, but it's why I think this situation would be good for him, because I think if he's a sophomore right now, and I think this is a situation where you transfer up, maybe you get better like on ball development, possibly at a better school. I can't speak too well to like the UIC coaching staff. Maybe they are great with that and it just hasn't come along. But he's 68% on twos for the year. He is below 30% from three on the year, but last year was a 38% 3-point shooter. This year he's like the guy. So he's getting less like assistant type looks. But he's averaging 16.5 points per game. Block rate and is 1.9, steal rate 2.7. So just 6'5", has a pro body, knows how to defend, can score, can get his own inside the arc now, coming along as far as his feel and passing goes. Like, he's the kind of guy that I think you could throw him in a high major game, and like, he has enough things that he's going to be able to do that he'll be able to stay on the floor. Jadon Jones at Long Beach State is a guy who's like basically just a 3-and-D guy. Like, ball skills really aren't there, but I think you look at a guy like Joey Calcaterra at UConn this year, who like scored 10 points a game in a conference and is like doing the same thing at UConn, because like the role is just like, I shoot. Jadon probably not as good of a shooter, but like way better defensively, especially like really knows how to play off ball defense. He's a guy that could do that. And then I would throw out Devontae Blanton from Eastern Kentucky, who like, I think is putting up good scoring numbers, but he is really heavy on his feet. Like, the defense I worry about with him, but he can really score. He is 6'6", 15.6 points per game. On the season, he is 42% from three, and he's averaging around 3 assists per game. So it's 6'6", he can put it on the floor, he can shoot, and he's powerful enough that he can get to his spots. So I like his offensive translation. The defense would scare me a little bit, but like, those were the three that came to mind right away.
Yeah, I would just say one more. I know he's an older sophomore. This is like where I got where I was going with the actual freshman for Hastrader, but Dylan Jones at Weber State. Kind of more of that.
Yeah.
I think that he would be another one that he could stand to go up in a level of competition to really prove himself. Kind of a power wing right now for Weber State, can do a little bit of everything. Just kind of one of those other guys that you would like to see prove it a little bit more against like higher level of competition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that does it for our questions on this episode. So let's just talk real quick, Steven. I think we had some schedule rearranging going on this week. So your column's coming out tomorrow. It's not already out as we record this, but let people know what you've got coming
out. By the time that this is out,
it will be out.
We're recording on Sunday. This is dropping on a Monday. The same day that you're listening to this, I will have my column, The Weekend Warrior, which typically drops on a Sunday, today that we're recording this episode. Mm-hmm. It's going to be dropping today that you're listening to it on Monday.
The Weekday Warrior this time.
To clear up any confusion, yes, The Weekday Warrior. Nathan, as we mentioned, is doing a lot right now in his personal life. So my column is shifting over from Sunday to Monday. And it is going to be featuring Bobby Klintman of Wake Forest. Had the privilege to do an interview with him over the phone a remarkable story for this young man. Hails from, you know, Malmö, Sweden. Just a tremendous story. Had such a great European, like FIBA European tournament under 20. Came and played at Sunrise Christian with some players you might have heard of, and Grady Dick and Mark Mitchell. Is now playing for Wake Forest, and very talented guy. Talking about in a year, Maxwell, this guy grew 2 inches and 20 pounds and is adjusting.
That's good.
And went from, you know, European basketball to American high school to D1 competition in the ACC. So great interview. Love this kid. Very endearing. I have said to you guys that if I had an 18-year-old daughter, he could marry her. Like, I love this. I love him. At the beginning, you know, at a portion of my article is going to be the interview. The next portion is going to be like the film breakdown for him as well, to kind of justify a lot of the stuff that I was able to talk to him about. So great, great interview, great piece. I'm very excited for it dropping, and I hope that you all like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm super excited for it, because he was one of those guys that, like, as soon as he kind of popped up on our radar, like, a lot of us were so interested in him as a player. And then, like, yeah, to hear the story, like, there just aren't a lot of guys in college basketball that are going to have a story like he has. So I think it's fascinating. I'm really excited to read that one. This week I'm writing about Derek Lively, which I'm sure a lot of people are like, oh, ooh, no. But look, I'll get into it in the piece. I'm not all the way out on Derek Lively. I still kind of like either. Derek Lively in some ways. Yeah, I think he's a fascinating player in ways both good and bad, in terms of what we've seen so far this season. And I just think he's worth dissecting, like, because there are some metrics where it's like, oh, wow, that's tremendous. And then there's other stuff that is beyond concerning. Like, to spoil a little anecdote, going into the weekend, he had like a worse rebounding rate than Keyonte George. Who is 6'4" and like considered ground bound. So yeah, there's some stuff that like you don't want to see from a 7'1" center with a 7'8" wingspan who gets off the floor really easily.
And was the number one recruit in his class.
So I had a lot of fun writing it, actually. Like, he's just a fascinating player, and like the range of outcomes, something you talked about earlier, is very wide, it appears. So yeah, wrote about him this week. But make sure that you guys are getting all that stuff in your inbox every day. So go to NoCeilingsNBA.com, click the subscribe button and any of our articles, get that stuff right in your inbox. Make sure that you read Steven's piece, read my piece when that comes out, and read everything that we put out this week. We've got a lot of good stuff in the pipeline for you. If you're not already, subscribe to the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed on your app of choice. Rate, subscribe, review, leave us a review, give us 5 stars. Say which member of the No Ceilings Collective is the most handsome and your favorite in the comments below. That'll help us with the algorithm.
Easily met, Kev.
But we appreciate you guys tuning in, and we'll be back next week.
Much love, y'all.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.